This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 23 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today, we have a Cinderella story of a small-town farm girl who grows up, gets back into horses, and with no formal training, ends up with an award named for her horse and their mastery of trail riding. And listen in to part two with Monty Roberts and his recent revelations in horse training. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Welcome back, everyone. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 15th and the 30th of the month. And I have my producer, Jen, with me today. Hi, Jen.
Hey ho, hey ho, it's girl talk.
No, forget Glenn. He's talking French today to the WEG.
Yeah, he's over there talking to those overseas folks hanging out at the WEG. Who wants to hear about that?
I don't even speak French. That's good. No, I wanted to tell you about my ride to Rancho Oso. Did I tell you about that?
No, this Rancho Oso, it sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. It's up in the mountaintops in the Santa Barbara. It's Los Padres National Forest. It's in the Santa Barbara Mountains up there, way high, where the oak trees are like, you know, 150 years old.
Oh,
and
wow.
The sycamores. It's beautiful. So we went on a ladies' horse holiday for 3 or 4 days up there. And there were 6 of us. And it was so much fun. So people should go to the Facebook page and see all our girlfriends. This is a shout out to my girlfriends who went. We do it well. We do the ladies' horse.
Were you glamping?
Kind of. I mean, we usually say we're glamping and we're in tents. This time we were in these cute little cabins.
That's my style of camping. I like that.
Go on. Okay. It's nice. Pine interiors and everything. It's beautiful little things. And but it was hot, so I was glad for air conditioning. It's not the same as when we go up to Sun Valley, Idaho, where you don't have to worry about air conditioning. You're more about how to stay warm.
Yeah. So the part of Santa Barbara where you were is temperate in that you have proper seasons, gets hot in the summer, cold in winter?
You know, it's still Southern California, basically, or Central California, so it doesn't get that hot and it doesn't get that cold. I doubt it even freezes up there because we're kind of in that wine country where it stays a little bit in the middle. But it was in the 90s up there.
So that's toasty.
Warm for the mountains, I thought.
Yeah.
And at night, oh, it was perfect at night, actually. We moved around at night and it was nice. But we had 6 horses. Oh, gosh, I think they were all under the age of 7 for sure.
Wow.
Maybe the oldest was 7. Youngest was 3 or 4. So we had them across the board that way, maybe 8. But we put them to the test, man. We went up like trenches of rocks and we went into the trees and over the – there wasn't much water up there, but there was enough to, you know, make us look at things. And it was just beautiful. Of course, we have a few of those, you know, scary moments where horse gets hung up. Well, there was only one takedown, but
uh-oh. What? Okay, wait a minute. What is a takedown?
Well, I can't. She didn't come off. So
oh, okay.
Can't really. Yeah. So the horse was walking along. We're going. The youngest one, I think, he's probably about 4, and he's going down this trench. In fact, there was an act the ride up there, and it was one of the obstacles. It's such a steep little rocky incline, and it's and roots, huge roots sticking out, you know. So it's how your horse picks his feet and everything. And the youngest one, his name is Chasen My Stetson. Of course, we had my mom on. And
well, it makes perfect sense your mom would ride the youngest horse, of course.
Yeah, the youngest horse. Yeah, sure. Get him trained for us, Mom.
It's the Robert's way.
It's true. And so he just decides to sort of step out of this trench. It's about 3 feet deep. And he sort of falls on his side. And Mom just lifted her leg up good and everything. But then he scrambles up. So by the time I look back, I see my mom scrambling up the side of this horse. Didn't come off. But I thought her saddle was rolling under. So it was like one of those vertigo moments where I thought she was going to jump, but she was going. But she pops up like this. We're fine. Keep going.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? Now, I've never tried that type of an obstacle with my horse because the opportunity has not presented itself.
You would get a lot of points for that, actually.
Yeah. So, well, there's a local trail course here in town where certain times of the year they open it up to the public and you can go practice on all of their obstacles for a very small fee. And the day I was there, that particular obstacle was closed because it had flooded. But what I found interesting is Steady Eddie Beaker, who loves the more radical the trail and the more rough the terrain, the happier he gets. He loves it. But he was very intimidated by that obstacle. And I don't know if it was because of the obstacle itself or because it was full of water. But when we approached it, we couldn't go in it because it was roped off. But as we approached it, he made it very clear that would take a little time to sniff over and approve before he was going to walk into it.
That's the smart trail horse.
He's a very smart trail horse. So the next time I get an opportunity to ride through one of those, I'm going to have in the back of my mind this story that you just told, and that Beaker might decide to climb out over the side of it halfway through.
Yep. You got to be ready for Steady Eddie doing that one, maybe.
Wow. That's going to be interesting. So I can't wait to, when the trail course opens in the winter, I can't wait to go over there and give that a try.
Try that out. And the other thing that happened, I wasn't going to mention this, but now that you're going to try this on Steady Eddie, we did a quadrille move that I wouldn't recommend, but it was very clever. We were on a very steep incline, and the front horse smelled something, just had some problem with where we were going. And he did a 180 in this trench. So we're in a trench again. He was up on the rocks a bit, and so he had like three legs straddled. I'm not sure where the fourth one was, but his rider, Diana, steps off just because it was safer with that rock, and he does this little 180 hop, you know, like stands on hind ends, and then, you know, you lift up the front end, and then 180, and then down in the front end, and stops. The horse behind him thought, well, that must be what I need to do, so he does a 180, then I do a 180, then right behind me does the 180. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we had five of us on that leg of it. But it was like, it was literally, we started giggling because it was like a quadrille move. It was so funny.
That's really funny. You couldn't have planned it that way.
Couldn't do it again if we tried, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. Now, I have a special request. This is a very special request.
I will try.
The next time you have a ladies' weekend in the mountains, can you please wear a GoPro camera?
Oh, I should. You know, I was going to, but I'll tell you what. My editor talked us out of it because she said it compromises your helmet. So everybody, that's a cautionary note. You know, if you drill into it, so I got to figure out.
No, you don't
want
to drill into it. You can get ones that go under your helmet through these special elastic band kind of things.
Okay, there we go. I will. I promise I will. You know, you got to live vicariously through me, Jen, apparently.
I do, because the likelihood of my going to the Santa Barbara Mountains to go riding is rather small at this point.
We'll get you a willing partner's horse. You can do it. All these girlfriends. So I had Gail Ossipoff. I had Beth Hebner. I had Diana Good, a trainer, and my mom, and Gail Kordowski, and my mom, Pat Roberts. And we were all, so shout out to those gals. And all of us were either a willing partner or a would-be willing partner in training horses. So, you know, there you go.
That's
for
so
my
cool.
closest friends, come on out to the
That's
next
so
ladies'
cool.
horse holiday.
That's
yeah,
so cool. So really see, the closest I will get to a mountain here in Florida is the Cross Florida Greenway. follows the path of unfinished, what's that called? Canal. It's an unfinished canal that they built. Well, they dug the hole for the canal, so this hole is big enough to put very, very large ships through, and it's several miles long.
Ooh, okay, so there's
They dug the giant hole and then just walked away from it, and Mother Nature has taken over.
Oh, my gosh.
So it is pretty cool, but it's not the Santa Barbara Mountains.
No, probably not. There's probably not too many trees out there. No, I heard somebody once say that there is a mountain in Florida. It's called a dump. It's a big mountain.
Yeah, the only mountain we have is the landfill. He is correct.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Well,
we're going to go with the GoPro
to live vicariously through us. And you're going to hear from a wonderful trail rider today, much better than all of us rolled together, named Judy Lemsky. I'm really excited to introduce everybody to her. And so up next, we'll have the Picasso Award winner, Judy Lemsky. Listen to this.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at IFA.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Welcome, Judy Linsky. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Debbie, I'm excited. I'm honored to meet you and to be on your show.
Well, it's our honor. As soon as I read a press release recently about this story of yours and your horse Picasso, I knew I wanted to have you on the radio to share. I think it's a breakthrough in what you're doing out there with Picasso. And let me start it off by telling you that I told everybody that you achieved 600 points in the open division of a competitor trail horse association. It's the ACTHA rides that you've been on. You're down in Texas. But tell us a little bit about winning 600 points in that and what that sportsmanship award means to you, please.
Well, the ACTHA is the American Competitive Trail Horse Association. It's 6 miles, six obstacles. It's a friendly, fun competition.
Right.
They have judges at each obstacle that judge the horse and the rider. The horse for bravery, athleticism, cadence, how well he listens to the rider. Mm-hmm. And the rider's judged on equitation, balance, a relaxed rider on a calm horse. They place first through six. You get ribbons and prizes, and first place gets 7 points.
7 points,
on
okay.
On down, right. Yeah. And they have divisions, open pleasure, junior scout, buddy. I think now they have new member divisions as well as mentor divisions.
Goodness.
Non-member divisions.
Yeah. I like your description of the horse that has bravery. He gets points for bravery. That's great. You picture that?
Yes, because the obstacles, you know, you see out on the trail could be even jumping a tree that's down.
Right.
You know, whatever you're asking the horse to do, you want the horse to respond when you ask and to mm-hmm. do it in a calm, relaxed manner.
Okay, so you got 7 points for all those times that you won it, but that still is a big multiple of 600. You've got a long way to go. How many ACTHA rides were you in to get the 600?
I started in 2010 when I first heard about ACTHA. I was at another horse event, a horse show, and I picked up a brochure. Uh-huh. And everything in the picture, everything was just what I wanted to do. It just seemed, you know, it was out. It wasn't in an arena. I didn't grow up showing horses or competing, and this was just something I could do at the age that I am now. And it just looked friendly and fun. And so we started going in 2010 in June, and my husband and I traveled around Texas pretty much every weekend.
That's a long around, too. Everybody who's driven through Texas. That is
I was hooked on the first trail ride I went to. It was in the Dallas area, and I was kind of nervous because it was in an urban environment. We actually had to go underneath Loop 12, which is a four-lane highway.
Yeah.
But he just seemed to relax into the trail, and it just seemed to be kind of his thing. And he was a lot calmer than he was on anything I ever tried, even at home in an arena. He just outside, he just seemed to love it.
What's with that? So you think he was actually calmer because he had a job?
Out in the open. He relaxed into the trail. Between obstacles, we just he just got that pace going and that rhythm going, and he just seemed to really enjoy it. You can tell.
Yeah, you can tell.
And I think I think it's good for any horse, any discipline.
If you can do it,
arena, you know?
There's a lot of people shaking their heads right now, though, that, you know, have been riding in a discipline in the arena for years. I'm not going to name disciplines, but, you know, we know who you are, who are a little worried about getting out of the arena. So do you think is that something that everybody should try, or are there some places where that's probably not advisable?
I think every discipline would benefit from a horse kind of getting out of what it does every day.
Yeah.
In that same discipline, that same arena, to get them out and just have the fresh air and just see what's out there and what's beyond at the next turn. Mm-hmm. I think it frees their mind and it relaxes them. I think the worst part was the rider would probably be the more nervous than the horse.
That's what I was going
to
ask you. Who has to be braver, the horse or the rider? And who should get points for that, right? I agree with you that a horse should be a horse. But where do they start? If you had never been in competition, so you were looking, and that's great. But if somebody's not looking right now and they're listening to you thinking, gosh, it sounds great, but where do I start getting brave?
Well, my horse is a registered American paint horse, and I initially started him doing some paint horse clinics. Mm-hmm. And they had the reining and the pleasure. The trail was one of the four events that they had. And I just fell in love with trying to get your horse to do all the little obstacles. And then to take that out of the arena and to put it out into somebody's private ranch or a nature preserve, I can't explain the beauty of everything. We've seen Texas and, other states. It's just, it's just changes your whole thinking on riding because you're enjoying the moment and being outside. Love it.
And being with other horses as well. Do you often ride by yourself or do you ride with other horses as a rule?
We ride when we do the trail ride in small groups from 3 to 5 people. Mm-hmm. And then spread out, the trail ride could be 60 to 100 people. But then you spread it out over, they have them go in small groups so there's no backups at the obstacles.
Mm-hmm. Do you find it helpful going with other horses though? That gives some stability to your horse, doesn't it?
Yes, and it's really good to have your horse lead for a while and then another horse lead and have your horse be at the back. It trains them to separate from the other horses, too.
Yeah, that's true. Now, how old is Picasso at this point?
He was a 4-year-old when I met him in 2007. He's 11 years old now.
11 years old now. Yeah. Have you seen a lot of change in him, or did he just come out that way, that he was calm
goodness,
and happy?
No, he was playful 4-year-old when we first met him. And I remember when we first saw him and he was stalled, my husband was walking outside his stall trying to get a better look at him, going back and forth. Mm-hmm. Well, Picasso turned into a game. He went back and forth, following my husband back and forth. So I remember Mark saying, this is the best horse ever. And then he said, he looks like a work of art. Let's call him Picasso. And I just wanted a horse. I was just happy. He could call him whatever he wanted to call him. And I fell in love with him, too. But I think it took me a little longer to discover what Mark already knew, that Picasso was the best horse for me.
A special horse.
Without
just for you, huh? Yeah, so you didn't. You had some horses in your background, but not competitive. So what made you confident enough to want to jump on?
I grew up in a small farm town in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And there were always horses out in the pasture. So as a child, I grew up, just getting on those horses. I mean, before I could even get the bridle on myself, I would just get a lead rope and kind of maneuver the horse over by the fence and climb up the fence and just leap, mm-hmm. land in my belly and wiggle my way up onto the horse.
Isn't that the way we all get on?
Yeah. I mean, it works. Yeah. By that time, I would have dropped the lead rope, and basically, I'm just going wherever the horse goes. It wasn't like I really knew anything, but I really just wanted to be with the horses every minute I could be. It's just mm-hmm. some passion that I had, and it just carried on into adulthood.
It's wonderful. Wonderful for you and Picasso. So what are your next goals? Do you guys, have you won it all? Is this the end of that and on to something else?
Well, I still want to continue trail riding, whether it's competitive or not. I just want to be out there on the trails with my friends and the horses. I mean, I've gained lifetime friendships with people that I've met on the trails.
Mm-hmm.
But, when you have someone that has the same interests as you and loves horses and loves to talk about horses. And mm-hmm. I guess from now on, I would try to get back to volunteer work. I've done volunteer at a therapeutic riding facility in Kaufman. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to use Picasso as a trail riding horse at a children's camp in Dallas. I'd like to continue
perfect.
Doing that. I'm recovering from an accident, and I'm not quite strong enough to do either of those volunteer jobs yet to get back to them yet.
Yeah, there is some heavy lifting involved in therapeutics, so I'm glad you're recovering. Do you recommend therapeutic as a great way to get around horses? If somebody doesn't have access to horses right now, is that something that people have a use for their time for volunteerism? Has that been fulfilling?
I think any volunteer work is great. And I think
good for you.
To have it be with horses too is just, it's just what I wanted to do. I mean, what I did, you know, it's going out, getting the horse out of the pasture, grooming the horse, getting saddling the horse, getting him ready for the rider. Mm-hmm. And then you have to learn how to have the person mount and be a side rider or be a horse leader. And it's just, it's so rewarding to see the improvement in people as they're, you know, the class is over and then the next class. It's just the smile on their face is nonstop mm-hmm. from the moment mm-hmm. they get on that horse.
Well, you're appreciated too. I know there's a lot of therapeutics out there would love to have Judy and Picasso in their lineup and could always use some extra hands. So I'm glad you're an advocate for getting out to the therapies. And there's such a broad use for them these days between children and people with health challenges and even veterans and people with issues and behaviors. They're just different than dogs and cats. I don't, do you have a description for that? Do people ever ask you that?
They just seem like they can tell whatever mood you're in, or they know. It just, I don't know what word I would use to describe that, but there's just nothing like being around my horse. It just is so comforting. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether mm-hmm. I'm grooming him or riding him, whatever I'm doing, it's just so, it's where I need to be.
Excellent. Great. And it's good exercise too, huh?
Yes. Even the grooming. I mean, everything is exercise. What I've been doing lately is, I mean, way more than I ever did is the groundwork. I mean, I'm an advocate for groundwork. And, you know, every time, I think it's a key to artist success. It's a key to anybody's success, really. And Picasso's a dream on the ground. He loves to be touched and groomed, and he responds well to verbal commands in the arena and the round pen. But each time before I ride, I walk, trot, lope, turn on the forehand, turn on the haunches, side pass, back up, all with just the body language. And it helps me to determine what I have that day before I get in the saddle. I mean, I don't want any surprises, and especially as I'm recovering from an accident, an injury, mm-hmm. I don't want any surprises. So that really helps me see what kind of mood he's in. And sometimes he just needs to roll and run and release some energy before he decides to listen.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
Repetition is the key, and the more you do on the ground, the better you'll be in the saddle.
Really anyway. Good. I agree with you. I think that's something we've taught for a long time, but a lot of people didn't grow up with groundwork as a real pivotal basis for their work with horses. Either people had fortunate enough to have some grooms or somebody like that to saddle for them, didn't build that relationship with them. Sniff, sniff. I don't know who that is, but I'm glad that you have the emphasis on groundwork. Where did you learn that?
I don't know. I think just from being little, I was always around the horses, and just, I guess from that, I wanted to be there. It's not mm-hmm. like I knew that would be a key to success. I just knew that's what I want to do. I want to be brushing them and petting them and grooming them, riding them. And they just seem to understand what you mean by your body language. When you do certain things, they know. Mm-hmm. They know what you mean. And so I guess just from being a child, being around horses helped.
Mm-hmm. And building that relationship with them sounds wonderful. I'm sure that you and Picasso have a wonderful relationship, Judy. And thank you for sharing that. We're so proud of what you did with your, I know you weren't probably even counting up the points while you were doing it, or maybe you were, but you know, us competitives do, but it sounds like you did it for the love of getting out and being with
absolutely.
Picasso.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then when you see you're getting close to points, and then, you know, it turns into a goal mm-hmm. and lo and behold, you know, when I got their top in their Hall of Fame, I was just thrilled. And then they created an ambassador award that's right. with 600 points, and we were first to reach that. And, you know, I'm just honored to be there. But at the last ride that I did, the last season that I rode, Carrie Skirmish, she's one of the founders of ACTA, she announced at that ride that season that they would be honoring my horse for years to come with their mm-hmm. annual Picasso Award. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be given to a rider that displays great sportsmanship throughout the year. And I mean, speechless. I was honored to think that someone thought that much about me and my horse.
Mm-hmm. I am sure
very
a lot
humbling.
Of people thought of that. I bet. But I'm sure that it's well-deserved. And create an award for that, yeah, then you know it was well-deserved. They saw that in you. That's wonderful. I would love to have you back, Judy. And, there's people right now thinking, how did she do that jumping of the limb thing? And so maybe we can have you back for a trainer's tip. Even though you might not consider yourself a trainer, you're extraordinary that way.
Oh,
and
thank you.
We'd love to hear what you have to say in our trainer's tip section. Would you?
I would love to do that.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Judy Limsky and her horse Picasso, for joining us today. Up next, part two with Monty Roberts.
I would love to get into a little bit about this horse you're working with that is Olympic level, but you've got him here. I know that you get a reputation after a while for having to, fix the toughest ones, which makes for an interesting revolving door at the front gate. But when you get an Olympic horse, you know that this horse has been handled by some of the best, and yet he has issues. And where do you start with that? Do you do an assessment first and then tackle it by finding the right person to put with that horse, or what's your plan? I would love to hear more about that.
Well, the person that's going to train this horse had him before and is a gold medal winner internationally in dressage, so that'll remain the same, I assume. The owner is a celebrity, and I can't really say who it is, and the owner is devastated, having paid a lot of money for the horse, and then can't move the horse to somebody else because they just have a conscience and they can't do it. And the horse seems to be fine for periods of time and then has these lapses where they do a flashback to something or something happens, and this horse just bolts and runs and crashes into fences or buildings or whatever's in front of him, throws people on the ground and puts them in the hospital. And it's devastating. I mean, when he goes, it's just lights out. He goes as fast as he can run and stops for nothing. So when I got him, he did just exactly that. And I was fortunate enough to have the right facility where he couldn't go through the fence, a big, strong fence, and he couldn't get through it. He crashed into it all right, fell down twice. But with the right equipment and everything, was able to start slowing things down where he wouldn't glaze over and do that. And then I never had any live riders on him for the first about 3 weeks. But I had artificial or dummy riders.
Dummy riders, yeah.
Mannequin riders. And I've got some really good mannequin riders that can even move limbs and stuff like that. And he's handling it really well and has live riders on now, and it's been just about a month. And he's had live riders on for the last 2 weeks or so, and things are happening really, really well. He's holding it all together. There's a tiny little spark once in a while, but there's been no dangerous glazeovers in the last 2 weeks or so.
So you have a team surrounding him that are scratching their heads and figuring out incrementally what he needs next, or do you kind of lay out a road map for him to
Well, both of those, Debbie. I'm there as much as I can be, but I've got my interns on it and a good rider on it, and then they get reports to me, and we do have a road map, and we morph that road map based upon the performance of the horse. And I think he'll be back in competition this autumn, probably.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that'll be a great story. We'll follow along on that. It's fun to see these really talented horses that maybe had no future at some point.
Yeah, this horse's future was a bullet, for sure. In
coach,
fact,
really?
I had him one day, and the owner representative said, let's just put him down.
Oh,
and I said,
because too
give
dangerous.
Me a little more time. What?
But too dangerous, that's why, to put him down, yeah?
Too dangerous, yes.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
didn't want to get somebody killed or injured badly, you know.
But this horse wasn't nefarious. This wasn't a horse out to get you. This was just fear.
Glaze over fear, yeah. Yeah. He just went like the wolves were after him, and I don't know why. We haven't isolated anything. His life began in Germany, like so many dressage horses do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Nobody's given me anything that would remotely explain the kind of behavior that we saw with him.
Can they just be more fearful in their DNA than others?
Yeah, you know, since Rembrandt in Spain, Barcelona, gold medal winner in dressage, Rembrandt was a very, very sensitive horse, a horse with a lot of fire in the furnace, you know, and he was unlike most of the dressage horses before him, and yet he was a gold medal winner. And that moved everybody to go home and start breeding horses with more sensitivity. Mm-hmm. The dressage horses before that were almost cold bloods. They had big feet and feathers on their legs and stuff, you know, and the Oldenburgs and the Brandenburgs and horses like that, the Holsteiners, were very heavy horses. And then after Rembrandt came this horse, Totalus, who was Rembrandt on steroids. He was really sensitive and would fly over the ground and got the highest scores ever. And it just continues that they're breeding that kind of horse now. Their eyes are bugged out on their cheeks, and they're really fancy movers, and yet there's danger there. All that sensitivity can get wound up in the wrong place and become very dangerous. So the training of dressage horses is changing as we speak. It was quite an easy method to deal with those more like cold bloods that had the thicker skin and the nerves buried deeper in their flesh somewhere. Nowadays, it's all right on top and on fire, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because dressage it has its roots in war, so these horses couldn't have been overly sensitive.
Dressage has its roots in war with, you know, iron, what you call that stuff that they wear, armor, with armor on and heavy sabers and all that stuff. So they were almost like draft horses in the early days of dressage. And then it's become more and more sensitive as we've gone along.
And the training, you say, is changing as well to adjust for that. Is the training fast enough? Or is it changing fast enough?
No, it's not. That's the problem. You see, you have these people that haven't bridged the gap as fast as the horses have, and people live longer. So you take the same techniques to the next generation with these horses more often than changing the generation of the trainers. And so we use some of those old techniques, a lot of them having to do with stinging whips. And when that's used, some of these more sensitive horses just get in a corner and fight back, you know. And so I think you'll see tremendous changes in the training of horses. I mean, Stefan Peters, for instance, has on our online university has lessons there. And here's a guy that's really moving with the times. He's a young guy, and he's moving along and winning everything. And I'm just so proud of him because he really has moved into the new world of dressage. And, of course, you have a fellow in England, and I'm not thinking of his name right now, but he just won gold medals, and his students have won gold medals with these really sensitive horses. So it's really changing, and the younger generation is winning everything now, and the older guys are having to readjust and rethink because the old-type horses aren't getting it done, and the old-type training is not getting it done.
It seems to be about the relationship, especially with the Stefan Peters, level.
The boy in England is Carl Hester.
Oh, Carl Hester, of course, you're talking about,
He's fantastic.
I
want to have a meeting with him because they're using join-up as a part of their training program now.
Isn't that
and,
wonderful?
I'd love to have him do a lesson for the uni on his join-up for the babies, the young horses
that's
in dressage.
Yeah.
And join-up fits in so well with those sensitive horses.
Sure, yeah, you build the trust right up front, and then you've got a partner.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing with us today, Dad. And it was great to catch up.
Yeah.
Not only the travelogue that you gave us, but also a little insight into what makes a real champion from a horse that may not be understood by what he's having to go through with his trainers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll talk
again. Okay, Debbie. Well,
you leave.
It's great to speak with you again, and check in with me about September time, and we'll be hauling this way and that.
We love it. You're our fearless leader. We're following you and trying to keep up.
Okay.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I know that I'm transforming the lives of horses globally. You can learn to do it, too, on my Equus Online University. There's a new lesson on there each week, all the way from join up to advanced. Watch world's champions give their lessons. Join at MontyRoberts.com. Go to my Equus Online University. You can transform your horse too.
All right, we have episode 23, Trainer's Tip, and today comes from Heather Reynolds of Reynolds Racing, and she talks about asking your horse on the day. Welcome back, Heather Reynolds. Thanks again for agreeing to come back and give us our trainer's tip for this week. What do you got for us?
Well, I think my biggest tip is no matter what discipline you're in, no matter what level you're at, if you have a specific goal in mind on the day of your event and you just want to get it done, the most important thing I can say is remember to listen to your horse, because your horse doesn't always have the same thing in mind, and it's not always your horse's day. So to get the best result, ride the horse that you have on the day of the event.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Yeah. Move up, move up, move up, move up.
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged. Coming up this September 20th, he's going to do a night of inspiration at Flag Is Up Farms. And again, you'll call or write to admin@MontyRoberts.com or 805-688-6288 to register. And then he's going to travel to India. Yes, I said India. He's working with the Brook Animal Hospital to help the staff train for good equine practices. You know, all the bricklayers and all the people who use equids to as their tractors, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So he's going to get over there to help out with the Brook, who he is the ambassador for. And then October 5th through November 1st, he's on a multi-city tour of the UK that starts in the south of England and goes all the way up to Gleneagle, Scotland. And then he's on to Germany to tour in November. And December, he'll be right back right after Thanksgiving, December 1 through 5. He'll hold a Monty special training in English and Portuguese. He won't be speaking Portuguese, for our Brazilian and Portuguese friends. And check out Monty's Facebook this week. We just went over 300,000 friends, and you can watch TV interviews that he's given there. And we just posted a lot of information about Monty's Horse Sense and Healing Program for veterans and first responders. Great stuff up there.
Fascinating. And you can see more, of course, at MontyRoberts.com, or you can call 805-688-6288. For details about today's show, you can go to horsemanshipradio.com, where you will find links, photos, and more information about today's guests. And we love your feedback. So please follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Monty Roberts and on Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. Twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. That's hard to say and so
very
easy
good.
To type.
I know. It looks good on paper, but it's hard to say. You're right. And many thanks to our sponsors, IFA.com and Equus Online University. Be sure to visit all the other great shows on Horse Radio Network, especially Jen's. And until next time, have many happy horse hours.